Ladies and gentlemen, this is the 12th and final round.
Right hand, Golovkin steps in and down he goes again. Unbelievable! Mayweather makes him pay. What a rookie mistake. A sensational left hook by De La Hoya.
It's facts. I'm the best. You know what I mean? Sometimes I don't want to believe in myself, but it's the truth. I'm the best.
I'm going to show you how great I am.
From Southern California, this is the Last Round Podcast.
Number 43. 43 weeks of this stuff, Mike. We're on the 43rd episode. Did you think we would make it this far?
No.
No? Where's your confidence at? What the hell?
I thought it would be over by now, Danny.
Oh, you thought we would have tapped out? We would have knocked out?
We would have broken up.
Oh, man. You thought it would have been a stoppage earlier?
Yeah, early stoppage. Early stoppage.
Well, we're 43 rounds in and we're still going. Once again, thank you guys for listening to episode 43 of the Last Round Podcast. I'm Danny Z, along with my co-host, the franchise, Michael Shepard. Coming off an exciting weekend of fights, especially the unification matchup in Dallas. And then you had Tank Davis's
walkover.
Tank Davis's title defense in Baltimore, where he sold out the crowd. There was a lot of people there. They came out for him. That's very impressive.
Mm.
That's very impressive. But before we move into the fight reviews and previews of the show, we have another guest this week. Currently on the line, he's a Team USA amateur, and I believe he's actually ranked number one in the world. Mark Castro is on the line. How's it going, Mark?
It's going good. Thank you for having me.
Thank you very much. We appreciate you taking the time to call in to the Last Round. All the information and all the stuff we've been hearing about you in the sport is that, and you tell us if we're wrong or not, is that everybody knows your name in the sport, but they just don't know your face. Is that true?
Yes, I've heard that before. And my main concern is just consistency. I just got to be consistent, keep winning, keep training hard, and eventually everybody will put a name to the face, and that's all that matters.
And then I Mike was telling me just before we came on air that he saw in an interview that Bob Arum, CEO and chairman of Top Rank, I believe that you had met him, and he said, "Oh, you're Mark Castro," and like that was one of the instances where he didn't know what you looked like, but he had heard of your name. Is that true?
Yes, I have met Bob Arum. And I was 16 at the 140. It was July 23rd. I remember because it was my father's birthday. It was in Vegas in 2016 when Terence Crawford was unifying his WBC and WBO versus Victor Postol. And I had went up to Bob Arum, and he's all like, "Anything you need, let me know." And he gave me his number, and he's all like, "Just call me, whatever. This is my phone number."
Oh, wow.
It's a good number to have.
That's not a bad number to have. Yeah. That's not a bad number to have in Bob Arum. So, you know, just go ahead and you know, like I said, for people who are listening to this show for the first time, or at least, hearing of your name for the first time, give us your resume. Like I said, you're ranked number one in the world right now. And I believe you started boxing at 4 years old. You have a multitude of accolades, and that's still developing, of course, because you're still going through your career. So just, you know, tell us your background, when you started boxing. And I believe you mentioned your father earlier, and he's also your trainer as well, right?
Yes, correct. My father's been training me ever since I began my boxing career at 4 years old.
And
so my...
Go ahead. List your achievements.
My name is Mark Castro. I'm a member of Team USA Boxing. I've been a member since the national team, since I was 15 years old, 14, 15. My accomplishments are 177 wins and 7 losses. I have won I'm a 2-time amateur world champion, the second American to ever win back-to-back. The first American was Shakur Stevenson, who went on to win an Olympic silver medal. I have I won the Junior Worlds, the Youth Worlds in Russia. I'm a 17-time national champion of USA, and just that's about it. And just I don't like to brag much, but I just like to work hard, work in silence, and just be consistent, and just I like to win.
So you mentioned you're 17-time national champion, right? That's what you said?
Yes, that's correct.
Okay, so I before we continue on, we were doing some research, you know, just before we came on air, or at least leading up to this interview the last couple of days, and Mike was having trouble narrowing down because he had seen it like an interview where one, right, Mike, where one piece had said that you were a 14-time national champ, and then there was like
the 16. Team USA official website lists 14.
Yeah, so we weren't sure like which one it was, but now you said it's 17, which is not a number that we even saw. So it's 17-time national champion, right?
So yes, the way the Team USA website hasn't been updated for my profile, I'm not sure why, since 2016. It says I'm like 5'7", which I'm like 5'8" now. It says my record is like 106 wins, and that was in 2016. I've been telling them to update it, but they haven't updated it. And just, it's, that's a 17-time national champion. And it's just, U.S. Nationals, it's different from U.S. Nationals. USA Boxing only counts 30 Nationals, but there's national tournaments, which is like national junior golden gloves, or like ringside world championships, and just like national silver gloves. And there's like national title, national Adidas. The USA Boxing doesn't include those, but those are still national tournaments where we compete against the top level guys night in and night out. And just, it's under USA Boxing rules, but just sometimes USA Boxing doesn't include it under them because they're not sponsoring the event. But it's still USA Boxing rules. It's still under USA Boxing sanction. But they're just—it's the same guy you would have to compete at the U.S. National.
So, Mark, I believe you've got the Olympic trials coming up? Is it October and then December?
Yeah, the Olympic trial qualifiers in October, and then December will be the official Olympic trials, where it's double elimination, where everybody moves and fights for the Olympic spot.
So can you just tell us the process for that? Like how many fights you'll have to have?
That tournament is, there's 8 spots and there's 8 seeds. 4 spots have been taken. There's 4 spots left. They get the top 2 of each tournament, which they had a tournament last year in December. They get a top 2 from there. In March, they had another tournament. They get the top 2 from there. October, they have another tournament. They'll get the top 2 from there. And then November, they have another tournament. It'll be the top 2 from there. And in December, the 8 guys will meet there. It's a double elimination. And without losing, you'll have 4 fights. If you win every fight, it'll be 4 fights. But if you lose one of the first 2 days, you have to, and you keep winning, you have to fight 7 days straight in order to get the spot. So it's 4 to 7 fights equivalent around there.
Mark,
double elimination.
What weight do you fight at?
I compete at the 125 weight limit. That's the featherweight. It's a new. It used to be 123, but there was weight class changes in the Olympic style boxing, so 125 now.
And, you know, assuming that everything goes according to plan, and you make the Olympic team next year in 2020. Are you looking to turn pro sometime after that, or are you still like you? What's the long term plan here for your career?
My main dream has always been going to the Olympics, and it's an arm's reach, and it's a goal because the goal is visible now and it's a reachable. But after that, of course, I like to take my talents to the pros, develop, and just compete in multiple weight classes and win multiple weight classes, and just. I'm a fan of the sport, so I would like to follow the footsteps of the greats and just want to be one of the greats.
Were you ever worried, Mark, that there was going to be no boxing in the 2020 Olympics due to the disagreement between IEBA and the Olympic Committee?
I was, yes, there was a a factor that I was afraid that there wouldn't be no Olympics. But then I just thought it would be unfair because say there was not no Olympics and everybody was forced to turn pro, and just it would just would have been that what if for everybody. Like, what if there was an Olympics? Who would have won the gold medal? Who would have been at the Olympics? And just like, if there was no Olympics, I felt like we would have been cheated out of all these years of sacrifice we've been trying to develop to go to the Olympics.
So, Mark, how old are you right now?
I am 19. I will be 20 next month.
Man, you're extremely young. So you got, and you're already very accomplished in all those accolades that you listed. So you said you're fighting at 125. Is that ideally when you hopefully turn pro in the future? Is that ideally where you probably want to fight, is within that weight class, maybe 126, 130 to start out your career?
Honestly, if I turn pro, probably 130, because I won't get my title shot probably 2-3 years from now. And 130, I'll be a solid. But it all depends, because you never know. Your body matures and you just get stronger. And you have to listen to your body, most importantly. And I feel like whatever like my team decides will be ready for any title shot. Because but ideally 130 weight class.
How's the weight cut like right now for making 125? Like, are you able to do it, you know, pretty easily?
No, I mean, it's not pretty easily. It's kind of like, I know I have to work hard. Like,
right,
one of my biggest strength is working hard, but that could also be my biggest weakness.
Mm-hmm.
Because if I'm not working to the standard I hold myself, then my body like holds on to the weight or holds on to the stuff I eat. So it's not, it all comes together when you work hard, you're conditioning right, and then the weight will come off, you're eating right. And it just, I have to make 125 weight class. It's not tough. You have to make a lot of sacrifices to make it, but I enjoy the process because I know I have to follow a straight narrow line and just so I can be there, and I'll be at my best because I know I can't be eating wrong. I got to be eating right. Once I'm at the weight class, I look extremely good, extremely healthy, and just ready to compete.
Mark, have you had any promoters reach out to you yet about when you turn pro, like Top Rank or Golden Boy?
Yes, many promoters have reached out. They want to know my plans. They want to stay in good terms with me as well. And they just want to, it's kind of like a recruitment process. They like to meet me. They like to build a relationship right now. And just they reached out, whether it's like Richard Schaefer or Bob Arum or Golden Boy or Matchroom or who else? Yeah, it's obviously come to mind right now.
So you've essentially been approached by all the major promoters in boxing, right?
Yes, I have. And it's just, at first, it was exciting, but now it was kind of like, got to get used to it. And it feels great to know that a lot of people are watching and know your hard work's paying off, most importantly.
Well, it looks like you have a lot of options on the table.
It's always nice to be wanted, isn't it? You know, right. Having all those people reach out to you.
It feels great.
So, Mark, is it true that you sparred with Lomachenko in the past, Vasily Lomachenko?
Yes, I sparred Lomachenko on two occasions. Once when I was 16, and another when I was 18.
And how was that? Walk us through those. Sparring sessions.
The first time we sparred, it was a good learning experience. We went 2 rounds, and I was more of his warm up, but I still got to feel what it felt like. He's really competitive. He likes to doesn't like to lose any rounds. Doesn't like to get touched at all. And then the second time when I sparred, when I was 18, I kind of let his hands go a little bit more, but I wasn't letting myself get hit or just. I wasn't backing down from the occasion as well either. And we went the full 3 rounds that time. And just, it's the same thing. He's really competitive and he doesn't like to lose the rounds. And it was a great learning experience because I know where I stand with a guy that's considered one of the greatest ever boxers ever.
What other prominent names have you sparred with, and what did you learn?
Vasily Lomachenko is the most decorated guy I've sparred against. Probably the most guy I went to learn from the most. It's probably Carlos Balderas, the 2016 Olympian.
Mm-hmm.
He has been around many rounds, probably at least 100 rounds. But the guy that the people I have sparred was Shakur Stevenson. I went around with Antonio Vargas. So the whole 2016 Olympic team, I probably sparred from Michaela Mayer, the top rank, she's top rank, to Clarissa Shields, to Jerron Booth Ennis, to who else is there? Nico Hernandez, Antonio Vargas. There's just a lot of people from the 2016 Olympic team.
And
it's just wonderful learning experience because, you know, they're at the Olympic stage and they're Olympic style boxers, and that's where I want to be.
And at, you know, looking at the current landscape right now, just because you did say you're fighting at 125 pounds, between, like, you know, let's just start at, you know, 126. Currently, who do you think is the best 126 pounder in the world right now? Like, in your opinion, as a boxer.
The best 126 pounder does not have a title, and his name is Shakur Stevenson. I feel like Shakur Stevenson is talented, more talented than Oscar Valdez, Carl Frampton, who else is there? Leo Santa Cruz and Gary Russell. I feel like Shakur is the most talented boxer there. And when Shakur gets a title, I just feel like Shakur is the most talented because I've seen Shakur Stevenson fight with go in there with Terrence Crawford and go many rounds with him and keep up with him as well. And just, they're just both competitive because that's something you can't teach, competitiveness. And just, like Shakur Stevenson has a killer mentality. He won't step down from the occasion. I feel like he's the best at 126.
So Shakur is obviously getting pretty close to a world title shot. There's been rumors that, you know, him and Valdez, they're trying to make a fight. Top Rank's trying to make that fight, but Valdez wants Frampton. He wants a bigger name. You know, I understand. At one point, it becomes a business, so we all understand the game behind it. But you think that if Shakur got a shot at Valdez's title, you think he can beat Oscar Valdez?
Yes, I feel like he could beat Oscar Valdez. I know how they have sparred on an occasion already, and I think Shakur wasn't. That was back in 2017, and I think Shakur did great against him. That's I heard from. I've heard, but I feel like my prediction in that scenario is Oscar Valdez vacates the belt because he just vacates the belt, and he knows that Shakur Stevenson is a really prospect well regarded by Top Rank. If, I don't know if you guys recall, the way Oscar Valdez won his belt is because that was Vasily Lomachenko's belt that he vacated.
Right.
So they keep the belt in the house for Bob Arum, and just Shakur wins the vacate belt, and then Shakur starts collecting all the belts at 126, and eventually moves up to 130.
Smart man, man. Mm-hmm. You know how the business works.
Yeah, he knows the business already.
He already knows the business. Oh, he's a smart man. You know it. Team USA amateur standout Mark Castro is on the line here with the last round. Mark, who are some of the fighters that you looked up to growing up, or even are look up to now? Because, I mean, being only 19 years old, who are some of the people that you looked up to, especially growing up as a younger guy?
Growing up, I'm a big, huge Team USA guy, fanatic. But I look up to many boxmen and things. Boxers like Floyd Mayweather, because what they did in the amateurs, and Oscar De La Hoya winning the gold medal, Andre Ward, and just the guys that I looked up to the most growing up are probably like the Olympic team from 2016 to like Carlos Balderas, to Shakur Stevenson, to Clarissa Shields. They're just, I just look up to them a lot because they have, they're paving the way as for Shakur Stevenson. He went to the world championships, just like I did, to represent Team USA, and just he just paved the way for a lot of the new USA boxers, and I look up to that from I look up to him for that.
And as I mentioned before, you're trained by your dad. Your dad's name's Tony, right? Tony Castro?
Yes, that is correct.
Tony Castro. Who is your dad's favorite fighter while you were growing up? Or who does he look up to? Or who are his, some of the guys that he liked to look at?
My dad's favorite fighter, his favorite fighters growing up, he would like Evander Holyfield, and he liked Julio Cesar Chavez. And just those two guys are the guys I can recall from right now. But me and my dad are one of our favorite fighters right now. We look up to is Canelo, because we just started looking up to him because each fight he's been improving, and after fighting Floyd Mayweather, he didn't let himself go. He didn't lose focus like other fighters do. For example, like, they let the money get to them, and just like, they're not working as hard, or they're not improving their next fight. And Canelo has really improved a lot and just stayed focused.
Did your dad box, Mark?
What happened?
Did your dad box?
My dad?
Yeah.
Yes, my dad was amateur boxing himself. He went 15-1 as an amateur, but then he opened up his own boxing gym and just, he started training pros, and I'm honestly my dad's first amateur he started out with.
Oh, wow.
After he started, first he was training pros, but then he started, I was his first amateur. He actually would take the nationals and stuff.
So is all his focus on you right now? Like, does he train anybody else at the moment?
My dad's main focus is myself. My dad wanted to quit boxing because he felt like he'll train fighters and those fighters would just leave him. So he just, he was going to shut down the gym, and I just told him there was a tournament coming up, and he's like, oh, I don't want to box, but if you want to do it, we could do it. And then we started going to tournaments, and I actually was, kept competing. I kept doing good, and just we stuck to it, and it's just a passion we share now.
I know, obviously, all your focus at the minute is going to be, you know, on the qualifiers and then the 2020 Olympics, but when you turn pro, do you have dreams of being like Ramirez and filling all the stadiums up in Northern California around Fresno?
Yes. I'm from Fresno, California. It's my hometown, and I feel like I'll have no problem filling up the arena. And I actually go to school there. The stadium belongs to my school. I attend Fresno State University.
Bulldogs.
Yes.
That's cool. I know people. That's a good school. I like that school. I have friends who went there in the past.
Yeah.
But you know, speaking of how Mike just touched on Jose Ramirez, also being from that general area, the last few times he's fought before, obviously this last time, he obviously draws a crowd up in Fresno. He draws a ton of people there. Like that city shows up for him. What did you were you able to catch his unification bout, his unification win this past Saturday in Dallas against Maurice Hooker?
Yes, I was watching it on the DAZN app. I was excited for the fight because I knew it was a 50-50. Well, I didn't believe it was a 50-50 fight, but it was anything could happen this fight. And I predicted Jose would win, but he impressed a lot of people, and I felt like the main thing that helped Jose out is Jose gets great sparring with all the people at Robert Garcia's boxing academy in California.
Have you been to RGBA down here in Riverside, the Robert Garcia Boxing Academy?
I've never been there.
You've never been there? Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Because I mean, like, it feels like a lot of fighters have always been there, and they're always sparring different people and.
I actually saw you spar, Mark, at Joe Diaz gym. I think you were sparring with Virgil Ortiz.
When? Where was it?
At Joe Diaz gym.
Did you ever spar Virgil Ortiz?
No, I never sparred him.
Was it Matisse?
No, I'm not sure. I've never been to Joe Diaz.
No?
I've been to the Robbie Garcia one in Oxnard, but that's the only one I've been to.
Because Mike was so sure. Because he was at Joel Diaz's gym out here in Indio, right?
Mm.
And uh, he Mike was there in the past before, and he was like, I think I saw him spar once. He's like, I think he sparred against Ortiz. And I was like, well, we'll just ask him on air, see if it's true. But obviously you were wrong, no. Mike. You were wrong. Yeah. Do you ever come down here for training, or do you usually stay up in Fresno, or do you ever come down here for sparring or anything like that? Because, I mean, since there's a lot of gyms.
I usually, we wouldn't, me and my father don't mind traveling for sparring, but just, we like to train in private and just, improve, and just, when it's time to get ready for a fight, we travel a lot for sparring, and we're not afraid to get top sparring, because my dad has always wanted to spar the top guys. Since I was 15, I've always been sparring pros and older guys, just because he knows that the level he wants to get me at. So it's, we'll travel for sparring, and that would be no issue for us. So maybe when I'm out there, I'll let you guys know.
Oh yeah, you can come in studio, man. You're welcome anytime. And then also another multi-time, national champion, who is also young. I think he's 20, 21. Ryan Garcia, who fights at 130 pounds. What do you think of him? I mean, I know obviously he's popular. He's getting a lot of attention, social media. I think he got a movie role on something, some little independent film or something like that. Did you ever have to fight him in any of your tournaments? Or, I mean, because you guys aren't too far apart in age. Did you guys ever run into each other?
Me and the Garcias, Ryan Garcia and his family, we are really close. Ryan Garcia is my boy, and I've been knowing Ryan since we were about 10 years old. We've been traveling, but honestly, we have never fought, and he's always been a weight class above me. And the last time before he turned pro, we were supposed to go to Russia together, the 2016 youth team. He was at 132 pounds and I was at 123. But we have never sparred. I've been invited plenty of times to the Canelo training camp to go spar him and just go get him work. But just our schedules haven't fit yet, and we haven't got the sparring in. But Ryan Garcia is my boy. He's really talented. He has really good people taking care of his career, and I feel like they're moving him good. And just I like Ryan Garcia's improvements in the amateurs.
So you think eventually you'll, because I mean obviously he trains down there with the Reynosos now, Canelo's trainers down there in San Diego, and you mentioned that his team has asked you before in the past, like, hey, come down and spar, get some training in with us. But your schedules haven't lined up, but you think eventually you're going to be able to take him up on that offer and go down to San Diego and get some rounds in with him.
Yes. Yes. I know it'll happen, but my thing is also, I know it's, my game when I go out there. I can't be slacking because I know the Reynosos are going to be there as well. And it's kind of like a good test for me because I know Ryan been pro for a couple of years now, 3 years, and it's a big task for me. But I'm up for the challenge, and I know it would happen soon, maybe this year.
You mentioned the Reynosos that when you ever go down there to spar Ryan or anything, and you'd be in front of him, you want to be on your A game. Are you still nervous going into that ring, or is that feeling kind of gone away? Because sometimes, especially when you start fighting, it's kind of, you feel those nerves inside of you, but after a while, you kind of get used to it. Like, it's a routine. You're like, okay, I got this. Do you still get nervous?
Yes, I do get nervous up until the point where, I know I control the pace, control the action. Because it's more like an anxious feeling, because if I wasn't nervous, it wouldn't mean nothing to me. And I know it does mean a lot to me, but it's more like an anxious thing. And also another thing, you got to trust your abilities. You need to able to trust yourself in the moment. You actually been preparing for the moment, and just it will all become second nature, because if you've been working hard, then you have nothing to worry about.
Is there, because I mean, obviously you probably met quite a few people in boxing, especially with the amateur career and the accolades that you've already achieved at such a young age. Is there anybody like a legendary fighter or personality or anybody that you haven't met that you would like to meet?
Someone I haven't met that I would like to meet, probably Floyd Mayweather, Manny Pacquiao. I haven't met them, but one of the fighters that just have been really good to me, Roberto Duran, who's been really nice to me. Also, Sugar Ray Leonard as well. And those are one of the two guys that have been really, they really give me great advice.
I'm wearing Roberto Duran's t-shirt right now.
Mike's got a Manos de Pierda shirt on right now too. So it's a perfect timing that you said his name. Cause he's, as soon as you said that, yeah. Mike touched his shirt. He was like, oh, I got the shirt on.
yes, sir.
But, I'm assuming, you know, eventually you'll meet Floyd Mayweather or Manny Pacquiao, one or the other, especially at the pace that you're going. You seem like you're achieving quite a bit in a fairly, significant time. Mike, you mentioned that he has the Olympic trials coming up in October.
October and then December, I believe it is.
That's right, right?
Yeah, the qualifiers are October, December is the trials.
Mark, how would you describe your style? And then if you could pick a boxer that you're similar to?
I'm like an effective aggressor. I can't really name no boxers. Just like, I like to adjust to my opponent. Just anything, I'll just try to find, I'll try to break you mentally and physically and just capitalize on your mistakes, especially just be there. Just ability to adjust as well, and just if you're brawling, I'll try to box you and just capitalize on your mistakes, get you and turn you around, get angles, and just capitalize on your mistakes. And just I feel like I know how to adjust to my opponent.
Kind of sounds like Lomachenko.
yeah,
a little
nah,
bit.
I wouldn't. Lomachenko is a great Lomachenko. I don't think. I like to have my own style.
So, like we mentioned, your dad trains you. Is there ever when he's training you and you guys are like hitting the pads or in the ring and you guys are going over some combinations or anything? Is there like that one fighter that your dad mentions? He's like, oh, do it like this, because some trainers or some dads, especially when they're training their kids, like. I'll get a left hook to the body like Chavez did, like Chavez used to do or something like that, or give us that shoulder roll like Floyd Mayweather. Is there like that one name that your dad always references while he's training you? Like, oh, give me that, get that body shot just like Chavez used to do or anything, or that jab like De La Hoya used to have, anything like that that comes to mind?
Yeah, like the Chavez, the body shots, the waist movement especially, like or Canelo's waist movement. Or it's also like a Mike Tyson uppercut, and basically the waist movement. We've been working a lot of defense because defense will get you farther in the sport than anything else.
Mark, I was looking at your Instagram and Twitter when you were coming on, and I saw that you had Romans 8:18 on there. I didn't know what it was, yeah. So I had to look it up. And then it's the pain that you've been feeling can't compare to the joy that's coming. And I thought that's just so relative, to a boxer, especially, someone of your age, starting boxing at 4 years old, having to wait until, 2020 to go to the Olympics to try to fulfill a dream and then go pro.
Yes, that's been a Bible verse that I've been instilled since around like 2015, 2016. And I really like it because life, everybody goes through things, and life always finds a new way to attack you daily. And just once you feel like you got life figured out, just another obstacle you need to overcome. And just every day you learn to live, you learn how to handle things, and more importantly, you have to keep looking forward and staying positive.
You're wise beyond your years, Mark. There's a lot of wisdom. Sounds like there's a lot of wisdom in you, man. And you know, we wish you the best of luck in the Olympic trials in the next few months. And then you know, we're pulling for you to obviously make the Olympic team next year.
To win it.
And to win it, of course. You know, that's the ultimate goal, you know. But you know, we just want to thank you for jumping on here on the last round. You know, go ahead. I know we already touched on multiple times that you got the Olympic trials coming up, but go ahead and plug that and then plug your social media. Anything else you want to throw out there? The floor is yours.
My name is Mark Castro. I'm a 2-time Mr. World Champion. My goal and dream represent USA and win them a gold medal. And I will win a gold medal for Team USA. Follow me on my journey at Mark the Boxer, MarkTheBoxer, Mark the Boxer on Instagram and Twitter. Thank you.
And what's the name of your dad's gym, Mark?
Honestly, we've been training out of our garage. But just we didn't have no boxing gym because it's just me and my dad. We really have no name for the boxing gym, but if we do, it's called Fresno Boxing Club.
Fresno Boxing Club. Hey. As long as it's working, I mean, you seem like you're doing fairly well anyway, so it doesn't matter, you know, if you're trained at a gym or at a garage, it's obviously working for you. So, you know, like you said, it's just learning to adapt to the sport and being able to go in there and execute. So, once again, we want to thank you for coming on, Mark. And then, like, if, you know, you're welcome back anytime. If you're ever in Southern California, if you come down here to spar with you know, down there at Canelo's camp or, you know, Ryan Garcia or anywhere else down here, you're more than welcome to drop in studio or, you know, jump back on. We can have you call in, of course. But once again, you know, we just want to thank you for coming on and we wish you the best of luck in your career.
Thank you. I appreciate it very much. I'll stay in touch.
All right. Thanks, Mark. You take care.
Okay. Goodbye.
Saturday. He's a good kid. 19 years old, and he's already that accomplished? That's big.
Like you touched on, he's just wise beyond his years, you know, which I think he touched on. Shakur Stevenson is someone who has all the skills, but it's his, you know, the things he gets up to outside of the ring, which kind of put him off track. Or right. I think someone like Mark, listening to him, I don't think, you know, you're going to have those worries with him when he eventually turns pro.
Right. No, yeah. I mean, he's on the right track. I mean, he's on more than the right track. Like, he's like on probably the best track you can be on at the moment.
Yeah, so. That's an amazing resume.
Oh, yeah. He's got a very impressive resume. And so. I mean, he's already said, and it wasn't surprising, you know, he's been approached by all the major promoters already, Matchroom, Golden Boy, Top Rank, all these, you know, all these major promoters. Did he mention PBC? I'm sure
He said he forgot some of the names, didn't he?
But yeah.
He mentioned most of the big ones.
You know, I kind of wanted to ask him. I was like, oh, okay, you know, like, is there somebody you're leaning towards right now? But like, but I was like, no, you know, we'll wait for that. There's still some time ahead. He'll be back on the show. Then we can ask, okay, now that some time's passed by, you know, who are you leaning towards? So, because it's always fun. Like he said, like, it's like a recruiting process. It's like for, you know, here in the States for college, like college basketball or even baseball or something like that. You know, these players in college or at university over here in the United States, like they play and, you know, obviously the best players get recruited by professional teams and, you know, the Los Angeles Lakers or, you know, all that stuff. And this is a recruiting process for boxers.
Mm-hmm.
So the promoters are the big leagues and they sign you, you know, signing bonuses and like, all right, let's see what we can do here. And, you know, honestly, I wouldn't be surprised if he goes to Top Rank. Shakur Stevenson's there, you know.
Yeah.
We had a pretty solid stable at 126, 130.
Yeah, I think we've kind of touched on it before. You know, if you were turning pro around now, you want to really look at, like, who's turned pro from that stable and how did they breed them, you know?
Yeah.
You know, Top Rank is obviously one of the huge ones as well. I think Matchroom USA with Eddie Hearn, they seem to do pretty well at bringing the youngsters through. And, you know, though they also have a pedigree of, you know, signing up ex-Olympians, Anthony Joshua.
Yeah.
So, I'd definitely say those two would probably be some of the big guys, guns coming through.
Big guys like Dillian White, yeah. The big guys. But moving on, fight reviews. This past Saturday, the 27th, from the Royal Farms Arena in Baltimore, Maryland, on Showtime USA, in front of a legitimate sold-out crowd.
They priced it well, I heard. I heard they didn't give away many comp tickets because it was priced, you know, accordingly.
Right.
So it was good.
But you know, regardless of people like, oh, well, they probably didn't make any money. I mean, the place sold out. They came out for him.
I like it though. Like, you know, like in England, that a lot of the time they do that. Matchroom will take people back to their home yard.
Right.
You know, people are going to come out because they get to see that hometown hero. So I think now that, you know, some of the team, the Matchroom guys are doing that over here, it's nice to see, you know, other companies following suit. So I thought it was good. I thought Gervonta Davis just went in there and just blew him out, really. Ricardo Nunez, his record was kind of padded. If you looked at some of the people he'd fought, they had a lot of them had losing records.
Right.
He kind of just showed that he hadn't, you know, been in there with someone of Gervonta's pedigree, kind of started to showboat a little bit, dropped his arms, and then just kind of paid the price.
I know, did you see his face?
Yeah.
Right as Davis stopped him, essentially, like they were in a clinch, and then the camera was like on Nunez's like face from the back, and like you could see he had that expression, like a cocky expression, like, oh, who is this kid? Like, you know. And then Davis like kind of gets out from the clinch and just starts wailing on him. And it's just like, you idiot. Like, what? I'd want to know what was going through his mind at that moment. Like, what is he really thinking? Like, oh, this kid's got nothing. And then, you know, a split second later, he gets stopped. What the hell was that?
And then he kind of complained at the ref when the referee jumped on him.
Yeah.
To stop him. I don't know whether that was just his pride was hurt. You know,
I mean,
he wanted to complain because just to kind of show face. But I think we kind of all knew when we went in there that what it was going to be. Gervonta Davis was going to be another showcase really for him.
Right.
On the undercard, we had Gamboa against Roman Martinez, which Gamboa, you know, won quite easily. And it looking like now that's what we're going to see. Instead of seeing Gervonta Davis against Tevin Farmer, it looks like they're kind of feeding those two together by having him as, you know, on the undercard as kind of like a co-main.
Right. I mean, it happens. It happens, but like I, you know, I'm glad that. And then, you know, touching on the Davis win, he got the second round stoppage, and retained his WBA Super World Super Featherweight title. Davis, like you said, called out Tevin Farmer after the fight, and I'm very glad that he called out Tevin Farmer and he stayed on Tevin Farmer, because the post fight interview by Jim Gray, Showtime's announcer interviewer. When he was asking Davis, like, pretty much, who do you want next? He mentioned all PBC guys.
Mm.
Gary Russell, Leo Santa Cruz. They were all PBC guys under, you know, essentially the Showtime banner. Which, I mean, I get it. It happens. Like, you know, and I was so glad that Davis was just like, nah. He's like, I want Tevin Farmer. Tevin Farmer. And Tevin Farmer fought on Saturday, too, on DAZN. Like, Tevin Farmer fought on DAZN. He's on a different network. So I'm glad that Davis was just like, nah, I want Tevin Farmer. Because Jim Gray was trying to lead him down that road, like, oh, who do you want, Leo? Do you want Gary Russell?
Mm.
Well, I mean, yeah, those would still be interesting fights. I'm not saying that, but like, I'm glad that he went like what's the saying we've been saying? He went across the street,
mm-hmm,
and he called out somebody from across the street, even though Terrence Crawford doesn't believe in across the street.
How would you see that? The kind of.
I think Davis stops him.
I think Davis stops him, but
Davis is a monster. I think he's the best fighter at 130 pounds.
It's weird because Davis is that, you know, just raw, tough, you know, just knockout punch, come forward fighter. And you would expect Tevin Farmer really to have the skills to, you know, maybe beat him or take him on a, you know, a 12 round unanimous decision because he's very skillful. But yeah, I think the same because Farmer still gets hit. That's his problem. He's not up there. Because it's kind of like a mini version of Tevin Farmer's Tyson Fury.
Right.
And Davis is Wilder. You know, he's got that knockout power, but, you know, he tried to school him. Tevin's just not that great that he doesn't get hit. Because he was getting hit a few times by Fremwire on the weekend.
Right.
So, yeah, I agree. I think Davis eventually just walks him down and eventually stops him.
He's a which would
be
kid.
Good because, you know, then we'd unify the IBF and the WBA.
Yeah. No, he's. So. I think Davis, you know, I was glad when he stayed on Tevin Farmer.
Do you think, though, like you just touched on, because they're trying to spoon feed him other names, we won't see it?
Honestly, like, he stayed on it. Even in the post fight press conference, he kept calling out Tevin Farmer. And honestly, like, especially with Davis selling out this arena in his hometown, I mean, Farmer would have to come to Showtime or Fox or whatever, you know, wherever they fight at. Because Davis has a proven track record that he's the bigger draw. So I think they know that. They're like, okay, well, bring Farmer over here. I mean, you don't think that Mayweather, because obviously Mayweather is Davis's promoter, Mayweather Promotions.
Mm-hmm.
You don't think they see like, yeah, Davis can beat him and then he can take his title and he's going to be a unified champion. And then Farmer's going to have to come to Showtime.
I hope so, because how long has it been since Davis really has just been, you know, sat behind Mayweather Promotions and the never letting him fight those big names? Because him and Tevin Farmer have been going at it for quite a while on social media. And as we saw this weekend, Jose Ramirez and Maurice Hooker is top rank in Matchroom.
Right.
So it can be done.
DAZN, ESPN.
Exactly. Yeah. So it can be done if they want to, but it's just, is Davis big enough at Mayweather Promotions to say, hell no, I'm not fighting anybody else. Give me Tevin Farmer.
Right.
And is Tevin Farmer big enough to say the same thing, you know, on their side of the street and just say like, that's it, I'm not fighting, give me him.
Right.
Farmer has to fight a name soon.
Yeah, he has to.
He's had the title, I think, for what, 4 different defenses now, and he's fought honestly, nobody.
Them talking smack about each other, especially they both won on Saturday. They both fight the same weight class. They both have each respective world title. Farmer has an IBF and Davis has the WBA. So, you know, why not put them against each other? And I know you said, like, you know, Gamboa got the second round KO against Roman Martinez on the undercard of Davis's bout.
Looked like it was a tailor-made matchup.
Yeah.
They knew there was probably going to be 2 knockouts, so the fans are going to be like, oh, hell yeah, get those both in together.
But I mean, like, Davis runs over Gamboa. Gamboa hasn't been the same for years already.
No.
But I mean, like, I get it. They need, like, a plan B just in case they can't get another champion. So, you know, you got to work like that in the sport. But, you know, moving on, hopefully Davis gets another world champion. Hopefully he gets the Farmer fight, but we'll see. We'll see how it pans out for him. But, very impressive, you know, he got the second round stoppage and he sold that place out. It was just under 15,000 people. It was a lot.
Mm-hmm.
It's like 14 something. So, you know, people showed up. Baltimore showed up for him.
It's just good, you know, taking boxing to different cities, different areas of the U.S. So
people, you know, and then he got like a proclamation from the city, like some little thing. So, you know, he got a lot of PR for it, which is great. And then touching on also this past Saturday, like I said, from the College Park Center in Arlington, Texas on DAZN USA. Arlington, so the city of the Dallas Cowboys American football team. I'm not talking about English football.
Real football.
Real football. Unification matchup. Jose Ramirez stops Maurice Hooker in the 6th round and becomes a unified WBC and WBO super lightweight champion. This was a great fight. This was a great fight. And we both picked Hooker last week. We both picked Hooker. But up until
I always pick a Hooker.
You always pick a Hooker. But up until that point when Hooker got stopped, when the referee jumped in, they were going back and forth. It was a very competitive fight.
It was one of the fights of the year. It's very rare do you watch a fight and you're kind of disappointed when someone gets knocked out.
Yeah.
Because it was back and forth. You had a little bit of drama with Hooker getting dropped in the first round, but it was because of Ramirez kind of standing on his foot and hitting him at the same time. The referee missed it, counted it as a knockdown.
But Ramirez at the end even acknowledged that. He's like, no, that wasn't a knockdown.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But it was, you know, you kind of had that little bit of drama.
Yeah.
By far the best performance from Ramirez.
Yeah.
I mean, I picked Hooker last time because of Ramirez's performance against Zepeda. I thought he was really lucky to come away with his title at that time. Yeah. I just thought, you know, the fight was up in Fresno. You had the crowd behind Fresno. Everybody kind of wanted Ramirez to win.
Right.
He was kind of the A side. Zepeda was the B side. So with it being like a close decision, you could, you know, 9 times out of 10, unfortunately, it's going to go to the home fighter.
Right.
But the change of trainer to Robert Garcia, he really stuck to his game plan, and I thought he did really, really well. Really well.
I mean, Ramirez, yeah, you're right, because he used to be with Freddie Roach, and now he's been with Garcia the last couple fights. I mean, you know he's getting good work at Robert Garcia's gym right there. He sparred Mikey. You know, he's likely sparred Virgil Ortiz. Like, he gets a lot of good work in that gym. If you fight at that gym, you're getting a lot of good work.
I saw an interview. I think it might have been on one of the DAZN ones where Robert Garcia was saying he has to try to tell him to calm down. You know, like, Ramirez will say, like, oh, Rob, how many rounds are we doing today? He'll be like, oh, just six. He'll be like, oh, can't we do eight? Can't we do 10? You know, he's just a workhorse, you know, just gets in there and just wants to fight the best guys, wants to spar with the best guys, which is good, you know. And I actually liked his performance. A lot of the times before when I'd seen him, I just thought, you know, he would just win fights. He wasn't really that dominant. But I really think he's changed under Robert Garcia. I thought he had a great game plan of letting, you know, Hooker come in with his jab. But Hooker's kind of weird because there seems to be no spite behind it. Yeah. He just kind of throws it, and then Ramirez would come around the side of it and just throw three or four punches.
The body shots too.
The body shots were great. And then you could see when he finished him off, that 10-punch combination. And I think every single one hit, and about 6 to 8 of them were right on the money, right on the head. It's a good stoppage.
It was a good stoppage. And I know there were some people, there wasn't as many people that were like mad about it, but there obviously there's always some people who you can't please everybody. But it was a great stoppage, even though like, of course you want to see more because it was competitive, but it was a great, perfect timing because obviously Hooker's, you know, his head snapped back and you can just see like he was taking bad shots and like his neck kind of went limp. You know, and especially how unfortunately we had two passings in the sport this past week from fights, you know, and even Hooker said after the fight, he's like, you know, I agree with the stoppage. I'm not, you know, I understand. He's like, we had two fighters who just passed away this past week, and I didn't want to be the third. I mean, hey, you know, that was a very powerful statement. I mean, I thought it was a great stoppage just because, like, if you look at Hooker's face or his body movement, it was like he was going limp. So,
but you knew that all the boxing coming up over the next few weeks and months, all those types of things are going to be analyzed more than normal.
Oh, right. Absolutely.
You know, due to what's just happened.
Yeah. So. And I mean, you know, it happens. Like, you know, you can't, it's like in any sport. You know, like there's always, you know, stuff that happens and you just can't prepare for stuff all the time. You know, as much as you go in there and you like stuff sometimes just happens. It doesn't matter if it's, and especially with combat sports, you know, it's you're hitting another human being, you know, it's not really like a natural motion that, you know, it's supposed to happen, but. You know, it happens, and it's unfortunate, but, you know, you just kind of have to deal with it, I guess. It's hard. But, like I mentioned, Jose Ramirez unifies the titles, and it was a great fight. And just because we both picked Hooker last week, we still emphasized that it was essentially a 50-50 fight. Like,
yeah, I think everybody, really, who talked about the fight was saying it was a 50-50 fight, just a clash of styles. I just hope that we see the big fight in that division, the winner of Regis Progre and Josh Taylor, which I heard today, I believe is October 5th in the UK.
What? The World Boxing Super Series?
Yeah, it looks like they have a date, October 5th, and I think it might be in Manchester or London.
What? And the last round will be there.
You know, hopefully... we see Ramirez against the winner of Regis Progre and Josh Taylor.
That'd be awesome.
Will we? Probably not.
Probably not, but that'd be awesome, though. That'd be awesome. You know, Ramirez is, you know, and
Progre wants it. He was saying the right things in the interviews afterwards.
And even DAZN interviewed Crawford, too, just before the main event.
I love DAZN do that.
Yeah, interview. I thought it was great. They gave him a platform. They interviewed him, and then...
And he actually answered questions.
He answered questions.
Not just yes and no.
Yeah, and Crawford even picked, even though him and Ramirez fight under Top Rank, he was going with Hooker.
Yeah,
he picked Hooker to win.
He was in his locker room, right?
Yeah, he picked Hooker to win. And I was surprised about that. But then he had mentioned, like, oh no, like we, you know, I grew up with him, or like I helped him, you know,
it's taking him under his wing.
Yeah, so I was like, oh, okay, makes sense. So yeah, I thought that was great as well, just to touch on that. And then, like, I think Chris Mannix was interviewing and also asked him about, like, oh, what do you think about the PBC not acknowledge you and your world title? And then he was like, oh, there's no such thing as across the street. And he tried to make his case. And, you know, I thought it was an interesting little dynamic right there. But also on that card, like we touched on, Tevin Farmer got the unanimous decision win. by scores of 116, 111, 119, 108, and 116, 111 twice, and retained his IBF super featherweight title. So like I said, you know, just repeating it, hopefully him and Davis get it on. Maybe later this year. I don't think it would be later this year. It'd probably be sometime next year.
He needs to fight some big names because I think people are going to get sick of watching him win 12-round decisions.
They both do now. Like, they can't, like, Davis, they can't, I get it. Like, they put Gamboa there just in case.
Because look who he's fought. He's fought Fonseca, John O'Carroll, James Tennyson, and Guillermo Fremwa.
Yeah.
How on earth has he managed to do four of those without them being...
Yeah, exactly.
None of those can have been a mandatory. So right. I don't think any of them are in the top 15.
The money, man.
So I don't know. The money. It's kind of crazy.
And then moving on, fight previews this Friday, the 2nd of August from the Exhibition Center in Liverpool, England, your motherland. Anthony Fowler, 9-1, goes up against Brian Rose, 31-5-1 for the vacant WBO Intercontinental Middleweight title. Fowler is a favorite here.
Yeah, going into the fight, Anthony Fowler will be the favorite, coming off a loss against Scott Fitzgerald. It should have been Scott Fitzgerald against Brian Rose, which would have been kind of a little derby from the regions and over in the UK. It's kind of a crossroads fight. Anthony Fowler kind of needs to win, get back on track, and get back into those positions where his pedigree and, you know, the kind of promotion were pushing him towards until he had that unexpected loss. Brian Rose, obviously, back in the day, was a champion, kind of been on a slippery slope. So, you know, it's one of those where does he win, kind of go back onto a little purple patch, get a few more wins, get a few more big fights, then retire? Or does he take a loss against Anthony Fowler and just end up calling it a day?
Who knows? Looks like we're going to have to wait and see. And then wrap it up here this Saturday, the 3rd of August from the Barclays Center in New York City on Fox, USA. Heavyweight matchup between the Polish Adam Kownacki, 19-0, undefeated, goes up against the veteran Chris the Nightmare Areola, Southern California resident, 38-5-1. I think they're still pretty solid names. Obviously, Kownacki's the favorite going into this, but I'm not counting out Areola. I mean, he's had, two or three title shots. He's came up short. I'm surprised they're putting it at the Barclays Center.
I think that we touched on before the show where he has a big Polish following New York.
Yeah, they're expecting Adam Kownacki.
I believe he sells on average like 5,000 to 6,000 tickets to the Polish contingent out there. For people that have not seen Kownacki, I would kind of say he's like the Polish Andy Ruiz, kind of surprisingly quick on his feet, throws a lot of punches, a lot of combinations. And then Areola, I imagine most boxing fans will remember Areola from, you know, fighting Deontay Wilder, having a few title shots.
He fought Klitschko at the Staples Center here.
Yeah, he's had a few chances, really. Changed trainer from Henry Ramirez to Joe Guzan now. So hopefully, you know, Joe Guzan's very strict, very old school. So maybe he can, you know, kind of whip Areola into shape because, over those years, he's kind of gets a bit lackadaisical, piles on the weight, gets tired very early in the fight. So maybe going to someone like a teacher and student, maybe that's something, you know, Areola needs,
right?
You know, instead of having Henry Ramirez, which was really kind of his friend.
Right.
So maybe having that strictness will do him good. But
yeah,
it's another kind of fight for Areola where, you know, Adam Kownacki's going up the hill, you know, looking forward to hopefully a Wilder fight eventually next year since he's part of the PBC, and Areola, it's kind of make or break time for him.
No, you're right. Yeah, I mean, like you said, hope that Chris Areola moving to Joe Goosen could put him like Sly Stallone over the top. So you remember that movie, Over the Top? Sylvester Stallone. It was an arm wrestling movie. I hope somebody out there gets it. I said, you said that. That's the first thing I thought of. It's an arm wrestling movie with Sylvester Stallone, Over the Top. I'm waiting for Over the Top 2. And then also on that card, wrapping up, Marcus Brown and John Pascal. Damn, what is this, 2010? For the WBC silver and interim WBA light heavyweight titles.
Just got to hope Marcus Brown doesn't get arrested before.
Yeah, so we'll see how that was.
Three or four domestic violence arrests over the last year.
A fight in and out of the ring. And then from Marquee Falls Park in Belfast, Northern Ireland on ESPN Plus, the app. Michael Conlan returns 11-0 against Diego Alberto Ruiz, 21-2 for the vacant WBA Intercontinental and WBO Intercontinental Featherweight titles. And then also Luke Keeler versus Luis Arias, also on that card. So, you know, there's always boxing happening. I mean, there's not crazy fights this weekend, but
no, it's kind of a weekend off, really. Just, you know, it's one of those weekends where you can kind of just catch up on the highlights on Sunday,
right? So,
well we can't because we have a podcast, but
yeah, so we're going to be keeping an eye on these fights, of course. But once again, we want to thank USA Amateur Standout, who has a really good shot at winning it all next year at the Olympics. Mark Castro for jumping on this week on the last round as our guest. Follow him at what is it, Mark the Boxer?
Yeah, at Mark the Boxer.
At Mark the Boxer on social media. We want to thank him for jumping on, talking about his background, his favorite fighters coming up, you know, all that stuff. So we wish him the best of luck. I'm sure we'll have him on again in the future. And then, Mike, you want to tell them where they can follow us?
So our Twitter and Instagram are both at the last round 12. And then next week, we'll be looking at the Joshua Franco, Oscar Negrete, the Virgil Ortiz Jr., and Antonio Orozco. So it should be some decent little cards.
Yeah, we got some good stuff coming up. So once again, for Michael Shepherd, I'm Danny Z. This is the last round.
Thanks for supporting and listening to the show. Follow us at The Last Round 12 on social media. Rate, review, and subscribe. This is the Last Round Podcast.